Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who run a 4-minute 40, Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast. This is episode 125, and this is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I am your dashing host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How you doing, my man?
Yeah, it's that time of year, Chris. We're expecting ghosts and ghouls and all manner of frightening things around every corner, and I think we've got one for you guys today.
Oh, it's going to be huge. That's right. Before we get into that, though, we'll talk about what else is coming up in today's show. We're going to talk about a bevy of roster changes. The Riz, he's going to join us for the entirety of this week in Reddit again. You're going to get the lowdown and the showdown all the way through. We're going to talk about the Lions' path to own the Division North. And we're going to take a look ahead to the game against the Steelers. We've got a whole lot more going on. It's a great show. Case, you ready to go, my man?
Yeah, Chris. And here with us today is our special guest, Matt Millen. Blah, I want to suck your draft.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, a couple of quick announcements. First, there's no post-game show this week. That's right, no post-game show because you guys need your beauty sleep after those late, late nights. So we'll be back next week with the weekly show, and we'll get back to the regular shows. There is some real troubles with the shows this week. As you guys knew, we were doing a bye week for ourselves last week as well. I've done a bunch of travel, and some of it very, very short notice. I wound up in New York, and now I'm in L.A. Just popped out of nowhere that I had to come down here and do this. So, of course, we're doing this because we love you. I'm just doing it from a hotel room in Rams territory, we'll say, but it's okay. We'll be back on schedule next week with the regular weekly show, and then we'll do our live shows as normal and have a lot of fun with that like we regularly do. So thank you all for your patience and for putting up with this one being just a little bit late. All right, let's move on to those folks who support us, and you can do it too, via Patreon. Very special thanks to Dylan from
Transylvania.
Michael, Matt, Eric, Joel, the Muff, and Joel, not the Muff, Muncher, Nick Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Benjamin, Justin, John, Ross, Matthew, Morgan, Alex, D, and Peter. We missed you. Randy, Matt, G, Kalen, Scott, Greg, Lucas, David, Richard, Bryce, Chuck Nasty, Fight McCase, Mike K, Floundericious, Ryan, Zach, Gina, I got you, hon, Miak, Malcolm, Dan, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. Also want to call out our newest patrons, Zandy Lion, Gary, Peter Von Panda, Skyler, Mario, Lucas, Tim, Nicholas, Jesse, Pilo, another Nicholas who just joined on, and Brian B., the singer from I Prevail. Thank you all for helping us out and joining on as the patrons. You guys, check out I Prevail. They're, if you like that cool metal, iPrevail.com. They're a great band, and check their stuff out. He's a big supporter and really helping the show out, and we really love that he's done that. You can join him in doing so. Don't forget to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. That's facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. And check us out on the Twitter Maker at DET Lions Podcast. It's at DET Lions Podcast. Give us a follow because it's the very, very best place to see Case.
In your nightmares.
Make sure to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever, wherever. Give us that review, wherever you find us. Because remember, if those reviews don't keep coming, and we're looking at those 5-star reviews, we're going to start doing some dramatic reads. If it gets really crazy, we'll start doing dramatic reads of other people's podcasts, the ones that have
I'll have Pee Wee Herman come on and do a Boston accent.
That's probably the worst threat yet. All right, don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype. You can do it at Detroit Lions Podcast. It's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or give us a call and leave us a voice message on the Lions line. That's 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Leave us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And as we mentioned in the open, we're joined by our good friend Jeff the Riz Rizden to talk about This Week in Reddit. He's going to be here for the whole segment this time. Thanks, Riz, for joining us. Let's get right into it. The Lions released our punter Locke, and Sam Martin is going to be back for the Steelers game. That was posted by Woe Matey. This is big news. I think this is the best punter news we could get other than Casey Redfern was magically healed and back in the game. Right, Case?
Yeah. I mean, we've been blessed by pretty solid punter play in the meantime. But, you know, we've got one of the best punters in the league in Sam Martin. And so, you know, as you get healthy, those are the kind of things that you hope for. Minor improvement since we'd had such success with the guys we'd picked up. But improvement is improvement, and we can go back to, you know, we can take even a step forward in having one of the more elite special teams units in the league. So,
there was definitely, I mean, a step down with Locke over Redfern or Martin. And I didn't have that same, it's funny. Like I talk about so many times going from Murray to Jason Hansen on the field goal duties. It was like, kicks are automatic. What are you doing? What are you talking about? I forget about it sometimes. You get spoiled. And Martin was just so automatic that when I'd see Locke, it's not that he did bad by any stretch of the imagination,
no,
but he wasn't
when we,
right. He wasn't Sam Martin. He wasn't Casey Redfern, right? He wasn't these other guys. And all of a sudden you're like, ooh, gosh, every time I'm a little bit nervous, how's this going to go? But I guess like you said, he stood up to it.
When you get onto your third punter and he's still playing relatively well, like, I'm not going to complain about Locke is all I'm saying. You know, I'm glad Martin's back because Martin is the bomb. But
so, Riz, were you working out your leg there when they signed Locke? Were you ready to jump in and start kicking if needed?
I still got a few good kicks in me. Yeah. I'm very happy that Sam Martin is back. And like you guys said, it's not like Locke or Redfern were bad. Redfern was actually doing really, really well. And Locke was league average. But Martin comes back. He's one of the three, four best punters in the league right now. And this is, it's odd to say this. This is a golden age of punters. It really is.
That is odd.
And he's, yeah.
There are, like, nobody's better than Shane Leckler. He's the greatest punter in NFL history. In fact, statistically speaking, he is as far ahead of the rest of the punter group as anybody is at their position relative to anybody else who's ever played. He's really been that good. And there's a whole lot of guys that are Jason, like Hecker, Marquette King, and Martin's right there with those guys. So it's always good to get an elite talent back. I don't play Madden, but I'm going to guess that he is probably the highest rated Lion on Madden. If not, he should be.
He might be.
So yeah,
I'll check.
Anytime you can get him back, and plus he's a holder. He's a good holder as well.
Yeah.
And he's also got some experience being a kickoff guy, and that's always handy too.
Yeah. Yep, this has been a lucky team this year. It's hard to say we've been lucky with all the injuries at punter, but boy, have we been able to dodge some bullets on that. Like everything, the Lions players are so much like fashion. First it was the flu. Now it's Kyrie Thornton. Lions activate Kyrie Thornton. This is from Justin Famous. Justin is famous. He's back, guys. He's back. How long are we going to hold on to him?
Are we sure Kyrie Thornton isn't actually Andre Flewellen in disguise?
I haven't seen them in the same place at the same time now that you mention it.
If they wear the same
theory.
Jersey number, that's something else.
Just something to keep an eye on.
It is.
I mean, they're making moves. They also, you know, signed Jacquees Smith, and I'm sure I'm butchering that name.
No, that's exactly right, Jacquees.
Perfect. I knew that all along. He was with the Bucks. He'd had injuries in 2016, 2017. I think he must have ended his season in 2015 as well. But 2014 and 2015, he was relatively productive, 6.5 and 7 sacks each year. He's got some positives. He's got some negatives. But both of those guys, you know, the team just keeps trying to kind of fluctuate that situation and get the best out of it they can, and frankly, they, you know, with all the moving parts they've had, that they aren't standing pat is probably a good thing.
There's nothing wrong with turning over the bottom of your roster. And you saw this already. That some of the guys they let go to sign Jackie Smith, George Johnson, who basically took his spot in Tampa and sucked down there, came back up here to Detroit, sucked again, and is gone. Dayton Jones, we hardly knew ye. He's out.
Off to the 49ers.
That's right. He is with the 49ers, who were winless.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least you didn't get used to winning.
They're so bad. Oh, God. Good times. Yeah, so I appreciate them trying. And I like the fact that they're not holding on to guys. They're like, oh, you know, we signed him. It probably wouldn't look good if we cut him right away. But they don't really care. You know, they're all about making the team better. That's all you can ask for. It's better to get rid of a guy too soon than it is to hold on to a guy who's useless for too long.
It really is about Moneyball at the bottom of the roster, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I have no problem whatsoever with the movement we've seen there, with the signings we've seen there. We shouldn't necessarily expect great things, but especially with a guy like Smith, you never know if he does manage to, you know, find what he had a few years ago before his injury started, then you do have a solid rotational player. So who knows? Cross your fingers. Hope for the best.
He's a pass rush specialist guy. He can play on third downs. Need. Yeah, exactly. He's got some sizzle. He's got a shoulder dip move that he uses pretty well. But he also played special teams. He actually got hurt on special teams when he was in Tampa, his first injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good, because that's not something you would ever see George Johnson doing.
No.
All right. Move on. This is probably the roster move of the year. Really solidified the run to Super Bowl. The Lions claim quarterback Brad Kaya. Back to where he started. That was posted by Severely Nocturnal. Guys, this is it, right? Super Bowl confirmed. Brad Kaya at the helm, and he's going to carry this team. But that powerful arm of his, amazing accuracy, and darn good looks.
I am trying so hard not to, like, knife everything in my path right at the moment. I was pissed off when this happened, and just thinking about it now, I'm getting triggered, man. This is the stupidest move of the Bob Quinn era. I don't understand it at all.
But this is the guaranteed Super Bowl. What are you talking about?
This is a guy who wasn't good enough to make your team over the summer. So he goes to Carolina, and the Panthers, who, you know, don't have a need for a fourth quarterback, got rid of him. So instead of, like, letting him languish out there, the Lions claim him. So they claim him back in a week where they're not practicing. So, this was one of the moves that they made when they got rid of Jones and Johnson. So he's responsible for one of those guys not being on the team anymore. Now, obviously, they're not on the team anymore. Yeah. So it's not necessarily the biggest of losses. But Brad Kaya, we saw him in the preseason. He's worthless. The argument that was put out was that, well, he knows the offense, and it gives Stafford somebody who can run the offense in practice. They weren't fucking practicing. They were off.
Here's the only counter to that, and I don't disagree with you at all.
He's terrible.
I'm not expecting anything out of him ever. But if they, we didn't see any. I didn't see anything I liked out of Rudock last year in preseason, and this year in preseason he was significantly improved. So I mean, that's if they're looking at him as like a shot in the dark developmental player, like, it's, I mean, everybody knows it's not going to work, but it's not like they really cost themselves anything significant to put him on the practice squad again.
My best label,
my thought
for Brad Kaya, is he's in perfect position to back up Kellen Moore.
Yeah,
he's just, that's
probably true.
He's not going to develop. When we saw him at training camp, it was, I mean, he would throw that ball, especially when he tried to go for the long ball. You could go get a soda, a popcorn, take a leak, finish the soda, grab another one, come on back to your seat and sit down before the ball came down. I mean, it was the weakest arm I've seen in a pro level quarterback in a long time.
It's worse than Kellen Moore's. There is no question it's worse than Kellen Moore's.
Yeah.
I'll go back to down at the combine. I was down there and we were watching the quarterbacks throw, and I was sitting with a couple of other guys, And we're all looking at each other, and like, and this is when they're doing like their throwing session where you like figure out how the velocity is. There's no defense on the field, and he's waiting for the receivers to get open before he threw the ball. It was the damnedest thing I've ever seen. He's
doing those mental reps every time.
Oh my God, he's so bad. So somebody, because I made a claim on Twitter, I said that I can find you 25 quarterbacks right now who are unemployed or on practice squads who are better. Somebody challenged me to it. It only took me like 15 minutes to come up with the list of guys that are better than him. Like on that day, Taylor Heinicke from Old Dominion, who's Kellen Moore sized and only has slightly a little bit more skill than Kellen Moore, does have a better arm. The best thing about him is that his name in autocorrect goes to Taylor Swift Heineken, which is awesome. And the fact that I told him this at the Shrine game, and he was cool about it. He's like, that's sweet, man. Show my dad. But so anyway, he was trying out. He had tried out for six teams in the last 5 weeks, and I guarantee you he's better than Brad Kaya, and he's still out there right now. So they should have signed my boy Swift Heineken.
It just makes no sense at all as to why.
Oh, it's absolutely baffling. And I'm not even kidding. I'm pacing around now, pissed off. I'm starting to sweat. It makes me that angry that they did this. And this is just with the backup quarterbacks. I probably need a chill pill.
A super backup bottom of the roster quarterback.
Oh my God! What the hell?
What are you thinking? If this is the worst move Bob Quinn makes, I think Bob Quinn can be labeled a success, though, right?
It will be hard to make anything that's worse than that, other than, like, I don't know, trading Eric Ebron for Martavis Bryant. That would be similar.
It would have to be more impactfully bad, right? I mean, this may be really bad, but really, what's the impact here? Nah, you're messing around with your money ball side of the roster, and it isn't going to change anything.
I suppose. All right. I'm untriggering.
You back with us? All right. So, all you guys that want to get your Brad Kaya jersey, you're going to have to get in line behind the Riz, but head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click up on the main menu there, the shop link, and you can get that Brad Kaya brand new jersey. You wear it around town. So head on over to Holland, find yourself some Riz. He's got a radio show he does every Sunday. Maybe stand outside with your Kaya jersey on and cheer him through the window while he's doing a show.
Come on into the casino, man. I'll buy you a drink. You're going to need it.
All your official gear. Head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on that shop link and keep the toasters. We don't need them yet. It isn't that bad a deal yet. We'll see what happens with Pittsburgh and the rest of the couple more games before we jump in the bathtubs with those. Also, don't forget about Amazon. Head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Again, the shop link, and it'll take you to Amazon and all your shopping there. They give us credit. It's just like a little fundraiser when you buy those Girl Scout cookies and they give the little gals a little bit of money. Well, they do the same thing for us. They share a little bit of the sale and kick it back our way, but no inflated prices. So, great deal. StraightLinesPodcast.com, shop link on the main menu. Let's move on to the next topic. This one was, there was a lot of conversation about this, and the whole topic of Eric Ebron triggers many, many people, myself included. I don't know if I'm suffering from Stockholm Syndrome. I don't know if I'm just out of fucks to give. I don't know where I'm at right now. I was actually, guys, this is how crazy it is. I was actually defending Eric Ebron in the subreddit this last week. I don't know that anybody would ever expect me to do that, but
dogs and cats living together.
The article, Eric Ebron, an unpopular opinion about him and sports fans. It was posted by Is Joik Elite, and it's from Sean Lanigan over at DetroitLionsPodcast.com. It was a great article, and he couched it in the fact that it would be an unpopular opinion. And the article talks a lot about, you know, trying to separate the person from the play. You can hate what he does for the team. You can hate the player. But how much are you helping? We had this conversation a little bit last week on the show. How much are you actually helping your team by booing Eric Ebron at home when he's on the field? How much are you helping your team by continuously harassing him on a very personal level on social media? It may feel good to vent, but how are you helping by very, very personally attacking this? And I'm looking at you, Case, when I say this, because you're probably the worst of all the people that have been talking shit about Ebron.
Yeah, that's totally been me and not you know, my usual self about everything and, you know, taking the middle road. I've totally been ripping on Ebron. No, no. And I've always said, you know, we take an illogical look at players sometimes. And that has been very much so true with Ebron, that we don't look at him logically in terms of what he does for the team, as opposed to we look at him as what we think he should do for the team. And those are two very different things. And I can't say that the latter is, you know, that people were upset that he isn't living up to what he should be doing for the team. There's nothing wrong with being upset about that. And what's unfortunate and what's really come out this year and didn't so much happen last year is that a lot of his errors have been in big moments this year, like touchdown catches that were dropped or third downs that were dropped or things like that, where last year he was arguably our best third down receiver, you know, right there with Anquan Boldin. He's when he's messing up now, it isn't just like nothing downs. It's really important stuff. And I think, you know, that's where the level of vitriol that he's been getting so far this season is coming from, is more specific to the exact circumstances under which he's been failing. I'm not optimistic about him in the future. I'm not, I'm not his biggest fan. I don't think he's great. But at the same time, I really don't think people are taking an honest look at it. It's all through a certain shade. So
Riz, on your radio show last Sunday, I saw that you were rounding up everybody during the bye week to get a Ebron jersey burning going. How did that event work out for you?
that didn't happen. Come on.
Everyone's getting their reputations tarnished that hangs out with the show at some point or another. Riz, just go with it.
Apparently. I'm guilty by association. Won't be the first time, won't be the last. I have tried to defend Eric Ebron on the context that I wind up, you guys know this, I don't have an outside job. My job is football. I watch football. I'm not going to say I watch every game because I don't, but I watch at least half of every NFL game every week. And I watch every NFC North game. I watch every AFC North and AFC South game every week. And I can tell you that Eric Ebron in those divisions is still one of the better tight ends in those divisions. The level of expectations that Lions fans have for him, it's unreal right now. It's not fair to him that everybody hold when you say Eric Ebron to any Lions fan, the first thing they're going to bring up is who was he drafted of instead of, and where was he drafted, not what has he done. It's always goes back to the draft. And if he was even a second round pick, I think most Lions fans would be a lot more tolerant of his drops, which are not good. I will not defend the drops. And his, you know, interesting choices in blocking. I think he has become a better blocker, and believe it or not, PFF actually has him graded very highly in blocking this year.
I think that's actually definitely something that Lions fans are choosing to ignore.
Or just not looking at, right?
Right.
It's all about E and the double Ds, though, right? It's the drops in the draft position.
And he's not like... He runs decent routes, and that's why he's getting open. He is the best route runner on the team right now, other than Tate. And with Tate out, you better believe that you need Ebron out there, at least trying. At least he's getting open. I mean, I can't stress enough, and I wish I would have been able to say this before the bye week. I strongly encourage Lions fans more than any other fan base to go out and watch other football teams, because I don't think Lions fans do this well enough. This is my criticism of
definitely
the One Pride Nation. There is a major disconnect between what they think happens in the rest of the NFL and what's actually going on in the rest of the NFL. And that frustrates the hell out of me when I talk with Lions fans. I get this every day because, you know, I am a Lions fan and people know me as a Lions fan. So when I go to the gym and we play basketball and I'm talking with the boys, they're always bringing up, boy, Ebron, man, what's wrong with him? Can't we cut him yet? Or, you know, they get on the, and Ziggy ever going to be healthy? Why don't we cut that bum now before he, you know, takes more money from us? And then I'll make an allusion to something that's going on another team and they're like clueless, you know, about what's going on.
But the one thing, Riz, the thing is though, and I'm not here to defend people who form uneducated opinions or just, you know, spit fire from the gut. But the one thing you do see when you watch other teams, other than the Browns, right, are teams that have had very successful seasons, winning seasons, made it to the playoffs, won playoff games, actually made it to the Super Bowl. And you don't see it with this team over and over and over. Now, I think we're a completely different organization now with Quinn and Rod Wood and the rest of the front office changes. I don't think that we're in that position that we used to be, but I think that's why people take such a jaded, cynical look at this team. They've been conditioned. Everybody, and there's nobody alive watching football today that hasn't been through the severe loss. the everything's taken from you. No, you can't have nice things mentality with this team, right? So I'm not excusing it, but I understand where they're going, where they're coming from. People see other teams when they've seen, you know, in what the last 15 years we've seen the Bears make a Super Bowl and make this crazy Trubisky pick or the last
with Rex Grossman.
Yeah, exactly. This team is unable to do it. That's why I think people are just grasping at anything because they don't know what good looks like, right? We haven't had an example of good front office, good coaching, good development of players, good drafting, all those things that you see with other teams, and they go up and they go down. We just kind of have been floating at 8-8 and worse for 30 years, 50 years, you know, whatever. And anyway, like I said, I don't want to make it okay to be meat-headed in your thinking, but I can see how people get into that trap, right? And this Ebron thing is one where it was just set up for him to be hated from day one, right? I remember when we drafted him. My family still remembers when we drafted him. We were watching the draft. Dinner was just about to be put on the table, and they drafted him. And I was like, no! Like I had this just visually scream that you could probably hear three counties away because I just knew I hated that pick. And then I calmed down and I was like, okay, here's a guy. Maybe he's, you know, he can play, right? They see something I don't, and I'm gonna give the Lions the benefit of the doubt like I've done my whole life, and he's gonna play well, and I'm gonna be that idiot draft day that overreacted to, you know, SOL kind of stuff. And that's the problem with Ebron is I think the reaction that most people had when he was drafted, and then kind of a wait and see attitude, and then coupled with his attitude on, I mean, he didn't help himself his rookie year saying he's already passed the rookie stuff before they played the
first game. Certainly did not. Not helped himself. He's tough to love.
Yeah, yeah. And he's been set up to be hated, right? Just from everything out there. And we've gone over this in the podcast before that it's a sunk cost drafting him at 10th overall. There's nothing you can do about it. That money's gone, right? So now you got a tight end at the cost that you have him at. Can he produce for the money you're paying him, right? And at that, if you look at that specifically, if you take that in a vacuum, absolutely you're getting your money's worth out of Eric Ebron right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, on a rookie contract, yes. Now, whether or not they'll keep him on next year, I mean, they picked up his fifth year option, but they don't actually have to, you know, go through with that if they don't want to. So whether or not they do that, you know, I don't think his job is safe. It'll depend a lot on, you know, like Jeff said, now is the time we need him while Tate is out. And I think this will be his opportunity to, you know, kind of secure whether or not he's coming back to the team for real next year.
Well, let's talk about that, because one of the big conversations that I saw going on in the sub related to this unpopular opinion about how folks are treating Ebron as a person versus as a player, trade him now, And my retort is, if you trade him now, you got a hole at tight end. All you have is Darren Fells, really. And if Fells gets hurt, you're screwed. And even with one tight end, that's not enough for this offense. And Darren Fells isn't the tight end for this offense. Eric Ebron's playing for a pretty low rate. And he's an average, maybe slightly above average tight end in the NFL right now. Why would you trade that for a 6th-round pick and throw away your year? It just doesn't make sense to get rid of him right now to me. Am I crazy?
No, not at all. First off, they're not shopping him. This is all, and I will say this because I have the assignment. It's on my desk right now. write out possible trade candidates for the Houston Texans and possible trade candidates for the Cleveland Browns. Well, in the Browns case, it's who can we sell off? But that's something that we, as people who cover the NFL, are given topics that we have to write about. Let's look around. Let's see, who's a disappointing player that I know of that my fan, that people who read me will know who he is? Oh, Eric Ebron. Yeah, 1st-round pick. Lions probably not going to bring him back, you know. But you know, they're are they a contender? Are they not? Are they a buyer? Are they a seller? It's all just absolute media speculation. I say this as somebody who's going to, I'm actually writing the one about the Texans right now about who they can trade Dwayne Brown to when they're not going to freaking trade Dwayne Brown. That's something that we just have to write about because y'all love it when it's, you click on it and that makes us happy.
Well, that's the funniest part about that is
basketball shoes
is that massive flurry of activity we always see in the NFL at the trade deadline every year, right?
Yeah, exactly. I do actually think there will be some more this year. Just because I think the teams that are really the have-nots are really have-nots right now, like the New York Giants. If you're looking for people to add from, look and see what the Giants have to offer, because they are in the reality that the Eli Manning era is over, and they're going to be trying to load up on draft picks. So if you have anybody off the Giants, not Odell, although I bet they would have considered dealing him because he's a headache. And they're really sick of his headache.
How about their tight end Ingram?
he's so good.
Oh, man.
God, he's good.
Yep.
I liked him, too. I liked him in the draft slot. He's my number 10 player.
Yeah.
Funny how that number comes up with the tight end.
And you're right.
Like, the whole point is the Lions are not selling off assets. That is not where this team is at. They are in the position to acquire assets. They're not selling. Oh, yeah. Ziggy's not being traded. Ziggy's not being cut because they're sick of him not being healthy, which people keep insisting on that he's on thin ice somehow. They're not trading Ameer Abdullah. They're not trading Marvin Jones.
We should talk about
who the hell would want
him. Some of the things I've seen people saying about Ameer Abdullah, like, oh, he's just, you know, he's blah, he's blah, 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 blah. He's the fourth best running back in the league after contact. Let's remember how bad our run blocking is.
Well, and you need that with that offensive line, right?
Because right,
contact
exactly.
Comes quick.
That's important context. I think a lot of people are just, you know, there's a lot of people out there who, you know, they think they've heard the, you know, the offensive line excuse one too many times, and so it no longer is relevant, and those running backs had better, you know, show up because, like at the end of the day, dot dot dot, all these phrases you've heard over and over and over again. But it's still the same problem we had last year. It's still the exact same problem. So to assume that, like, he's got 3.8 yards per carry, which, granted, not amazing.
Not bad.
I don't know what you're expecting out of it. It's like they're not watching, and I do
yes.
think so.
They're reacting.
Okay. Right. Let me go off on this for a quick second because this is pertinent. Because one of the teams I cover is the Houston Texans. They have an offensive line that's terrible. They have Nick Martin at center. He's really good, although he's not a good run blocker. He's really good in pass protection. They have Greg Manx and Jeff Allen at right guard. Manx is a complete pass blocking specialist. He's literally weak in run blocking. Their right tackle is Brino Giacomini. He's awful. He would not be the third tackle on the Lions even right now. Their left tackle is Chris Clark. He's on his best day below average, his best day, and he doesn't have a whole lot of those. yet they can still run the ball and they can still manufacture points. They're second in the league in scoring right now. Some of that is affected to Deshaun Watson's a fucking wizard, but a lot of it is the fact that they have an offensive coordinator who understands how to play with a bad offensive line. The Lions do not have that. And until Cooter figures out how to run an offense with a bad offensive line, which is a reality that 25 other NFL teams are going through at the exact same time, he's not the right man for the job on offensive coordinator, because they tried to make the line better. They've invested a whole lot into this line. The flip side, I'll go to the other team that I cover on a daily basis, the Cleveland Browns. They have the highest money tied up in their offensive line of any team. How's that helping them? They're 0-7. They're 4-40 in their last 3 years.
Oh my God.
With what is annually one of the three or four best offensive lines in the league.
Yeah.
It's more than about talent. There's scheme, there's execution. And a lot of that for me goes on Jim Bob Cooter with this offense, because there is talent. Amir Abdul is a talented dude. Theo Riddick's a talented guy. You've got a fantastic quarterback. Matthew Stafford is at worst a top 10
sacked 61 times, by the way. He should be tied for the seventh most all time.
60.
And he's mobile. We've all talked about how much he's improved his mobility and agility and field vision and feel. So it's not all about the line. It's not all about the guys up front. It's about the guys that are calling the plays on the sideline. And I'm getting increasingly triggered with Jim Bob Cooter and his lack of understanding what he's looking at on the field. And I think most Lions fans are coming to that conclusion as well. Because it's funny, one of the other things that we have to do as scribes for clicks is that we have to come up with okay, hot head coaching candidates. And like over the summer when we wrote those columns, Jim Bob Cooter was in every single one of them. Look at him now. He's not there anymore.
He's back. The rest of the league has figured him out. Cuddling up in bed with you.
Yep.
It's painfully. I mean, we don't need to go too much further into this, because I think we've talked a lot about it. It seems like a topic every week, but I mean, just the excessive vanilla-ness of everything is just it's kind of painful to watch. We don't have to be, an exotic offense in the same way the Panthers or even the Bears, we don't have to run trickery type stuff all the time. But to be so blatantly obvious when you don't have the talent at receiver, at offensive line, to be that kind of blatantly obvious, it's truly painful to watch.
Let me further this question, though, because, you know how my brain works. So we had the same conversation with Joe Lombardi. Very, very similar. It's vanilla. It's predictable. It's all those things. And, hey, Jim Bob Cooter, he's taking over. All right, rah, rah. How much of this is actually the offensive coordinator at this point, and how much of this is Caldwell's spoon in the mix?
Well, Jim Bob Cooter is still better than Joe Lombardi.
Yes. But
that's like...
Agreed.
I don't think anybody's going to argue otherwise.
I wasn't making that argument, but there's a lot.
Right. No, I know you weren't. But I mean, he's like Joe Lombardi, but mildly competent.
Right.
And the thing that he did that made everybody like him was that he made Matthew Stafford more accurate by calling simpler play routes. Well, okay, the league has adjusted to the change in the Lions' offense. He hasn't made the counter move yet. And that's, I think, what we're all waiting for is, okay, let's react. That's why this Steelers game that's coming up is huge for me, because this is a chance for him to install something new, to do something different, to do something creative coming out of the bye. And Jim Caldwell's been a really good coach coming out of the bye. If you check the record, check the report.
Check the report.
He's been...
Yeah, he's been.
I don't remember how many years he's been around, but
he's 5-0 coming out of a bye week, and every single one of those years he's done something a little bit different, where he's tinkered with the team enough, or figured out what he needed to do a little bit better. So I'm confident that he'll do that. I'm scared to death that we're going to see the same freaking offense out there. And Pittsburgh's going to win 49-6 because they're going to get three defensive touchdowns.
Well, it won't be 49-6. It'll be 49-6 going into the fourth quarter, and then the Lions will put up three meaningless touchdowns. Because that's what they do.
You know it when you're right, don't you?
All right. Because
the Lions, Matthew Stafford runs probably the best offense in the league when it's fourth quarter and they're behind. Like, I don't know if there's a team.
Because Cooter isn't in his ear anymore.
Right exactly. Yeah. And so it's just incredibly frustrating that, you know, we clearly have a blueprint for things that work. Now, granted, things that work against fourth quarter defenses when you're down by 20 points aren't the same as things that might work against, you know, the defenses when the game's tied or, you know, you're ahead or whatever.
We'll murder anyone's prevent defense. Just put it on the field for us.
Yes.
That's really what it comes down to. Let me ask.
But to try some of the things they try in those situations, to actually put some emphasis on receivers needing to get separation and needing to make a catch and like putting that sense of this has to happen right now on them at different parts in the game.
How about snapping the ball with something more than 3 seconds left on the play clock too?
Yeah.
Just once.
Yeah.
Just once.
My God, yeah. I know they want him to be Peyton Manning.
It's not a golf swing. It doesn't have to be exactly the same every fucking time, right? You can do it 5 seconds left or 8 seconds left. 3 seconds.
Yeah. You can see, you watch this in the Pittsburgh game. When that clock goes from 3 to 2, they know the ball's being snapped. They're gonna jump the snap because we saw it. Carolina did it very well, and Minnesota did it very well.
Yep.
And that's, again, that's some of that's on Stafford, you know, to say, hey, bud, you know, let's change up the count here a little bit. But some of that's on the plays coming in and how they're processed and how they're scripted. And that's
how they're trying to establish control. That's part of them trying to control the clock is letting that clock run down. But I think they're, you know, it's one thing to play towards statistics, but if your metrics are not the right metrics and you're looking at, well, the best way to maintain possession time is to run the clock longer while we're waiting to snap the ball, that does not help that metric. That does, because your time of possession is up because the clock was running while you're waiting for the ball to snap, does not mean that you did anything any better. And that's not an improvement. That's a false, you know, that's playing with numbers. I want to ask another question though. And it came up when we talked to Dean Blandino. He made a great point about the quality of the defensive line players, their athleticism, their quality, their capabilities are accelerating at a pace that vastly surpasses the quality and athleticism of the offensive line players. And we're seeing, I think, that really play itself out across the NFL this year as teams that don't have a really good offensive line are having serious problems protecting their quarterbacks and turning out wins. And you know, here we are, where we've got it's beyond the walking wounded, right? We're picking guys up out of high school football teams to play offensive line for us. Is this part of what's destroying us out there? Just that the defensive lines are so much more athletically talented and we just don't have our guys. We don't have our best guys out there due to injury and everything else. And that's it. I guess another way to take a look at that question from another angle is if we had our first team offensive line out there uninjured, would we be faring better? I know we'd be faring better. Would we be looking at our offensive line and saying, hey, this is a good line this year? Or is it not as good as we thought early on?
I think we'd be looking at them as good in pass protection. Because our pass protection scheme's pretty simple. It's the run blocking where I still think they'd be having major issues.
Where's your head at, Riz?
Yeah, I agree with that, especially on the right side of the line.
Yeah,
I think Case is right on with that because that's, you know, Rick Wagner, one of the things that was great about him at Baltimore was that he didn't give up sacks. And that was the paramount reason for bringing him in. If he could run block, you know, all the better. I do think we'd be looking at it a little more rosily. Yeah. Not like great, but we'd feel a lot better about it. I think, you know, just the jumbling with the guards and with Decker being out, that messes things up and messes up continuity.
That's it. The continuity has not been there. And as I said, you know, a few weeks ago and probably more than once, we had, you know, crazy high expectations because we spent a lot of money to bring in this right guard and this right tackle. But you're looking at a unit that's, I mean, and the exact amount of truth there is in this statement, I don't know, because I don't play an offensive lineman. But there's always been this idea that it's a unit that needs to gel. And so it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us that it's not gelled yet, especially considering all of the fluctuation there's been. So
sure. So last question on that, and then we'll move on. The draft next year, Riz, you're our resident draft Nick. Are we looking either in free agency or the draft to continue to bolster that line?
I think they will bring in a body. I think the biggest need on the team right now for the draft is speed at wide receiver. And I think they're going to address that fairly quickly in the draft. It's not a great year for wide receivers, but
speed,
you know,
yeah, strength,
I can
right.
definitely, yeah, I can definitely, I think Galladay is going to qualify as the big guy outside. I think they'd love a guy, like a DeSean Jackson type, a guy who you can, you know, run on the outside or in the slot, who's a 4.28 to 4.38 guy speed wise. Doesn't necessarily even have to catch all that well. I mean, we saw what Ted Ginn can do.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Running really fast.
Oh, boy.
And they really lack that
I
right now.
Be gone after, but.
Same here.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's that, and there's questions about, you know, whether or not they'll re-sign Ansah at this point, and so that may also be the, you know, that. I think those are the two big question marks for me going into the offseason, but.
All right. Well, yeah. Coming off of that,
the problem
point.
There is defensive ends who are worth anything never hit free agency.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, coming off that high point and that real robust discussion, let's talk about paths to winning the NFC North for the Detroit Lions. This is from Game Bad House 69. All right. So we've got a division, and we'll go in depth on the situation a little bit later when we get into Case's huge world famous segment. But this thing is pretty wide open right now. There's not a single quarterback who's won a division title on any of these four teams. So someone's going to get their first one this year. Case, what's this path look like?
This is probably only the second time I've ever said this. I was wrong the last time in 2013, but I think the Lions are going to win the North. And I know that sounds crazy with the way we're feeling pessimistic sitting at 3-3. The Vikings are at 5-2. The Packers are still game up on us. But I don't, we have such an easy schedule from here on out. After the Steelers, there isn't a single game that we shouldn't win. Now, we will lose games. Don't misunderstand me when I say that. We will lose games. But after the Steelers game, there isn't a single game we should lose. And the opposite is true for the Vikings. They play the Browns this week, and then they go into their bye. So they're probably going into their bye 6-2. We're looking at 3-4, probably. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time the Steelers had a bad game on the road.
They're a little schizophrenic
like that
this year.
Right. They're a little schizophrenic every year, especially on the road. But despite that, the Vikings come out of their bye with four out of their next five games on the road, and that includes games at Washington, at Detroit, at Atlanta, at Carolina, and against the Rams. All five games are going to be probably tough games. I mean, it when you look at teams like the Falcons and like the Panthers, it really depends on what team shows up. And unfortunately, you know, the good version of both of those teams showed up against us, and they weren't necessarily, I think especially the Panthers, they were a really bad matchup for us, even if I'm not sure they were a better team than us. They were just a bad, bad matchup. They're not going to win, to me, probably more than two of those games, which gives us plenty of time to catch up to them down to the final stretch. And they've got all kinds of issues. We might see Teddy come back in week 10, but you're looking at a guy who hasn't played football in 20 months. If Sam Bradford plays anymore, he is never going to be 100% this season, or ever, probably. but especially this ever, season, if he plays safe. Again, he, I mean, we saw him play a little bit on, you know, bad knees, earlier this year, and it was ugly.
Oh, it was really ugly. I felt
bad
for
Case
him.
And while Case Keenum has been, you know, exciting in some ways, tell me if you truly believe that that's a quarterback that's going to lead that team to some wins. Now, and of course, they do have an elite defense. Don't get me wrong.
Can't
but I just think the level of disparity on their or lack of ability to score on offense for them is going to bite them as the year goes on here. And actually, the same is true for the Bears, who also have a borderline elite defense. But you're not. But I mean, come on, you're not going to get two defensive touchdowns every game, or even if you do, you're still likely going to lose most of those. The success the Bears have had so far has been highly a fluke. And of course, you know, I can't completely count out the Packers either, because I mean, we've seen them do crazy things, and Hundley may improve, or maybe they, you know, get somebody else in there, and maybe Rodgers comes back for the next last couple weeks of the year and play spoiler and all those things. But for the time being, it certainly looks like they're going to get run over over the next several weeks here.
Don't start telling that story. There's plenty of time later in the season for the whole Rodgers saves the day crap. I don't,
but
I'm tired of seeing it in the game. I don't want to see it in the season too. That would just, I might jump in with the toaster at that point in the bathtub.
I'm serious about this, and I don't take this lightly. I think the Lions are going to win the North. And it's not going to be pretty, and it's not going to be with more than 9 wins probably. But
so, Riz,
I think they're going to do it.
What kind of drugs is Case on, and why do we want them?
I don't know, man, but I need the RX, baby.
And I mean, a lot of that depends on whether or not, you know, obviously we talked about Eric Decker not coming back this week, and maybe there being some problem, or we haven't, we haven't talked about that. We will. But that to me is like the one thing that could stand in the way of the fruition of this. And obviously crazy things happen, and crazy things will probably continue to happen, and injuries that we are not expecting right now will happen in the league. So.
Yeah, it's tough to look ahead. We just saw the Chicago Bears win a game where they completed 4 freaking passes.
4 Sweet. Out of 7 attempts.
4 out of 7. One of them did go for 70 yards to a 5'6" wide running back playing wide receiver.
Who is it? Damn, I mean, that kid's good.
Dude, he's fun. He's fun.
He would have been a little redundant on the Lions, but it's too bad that we didn't.
Yeah. Where I'm at, the Vikings are going to be 6-2 because they're going to pace the Browns. Probably. It's in London. You get to wake up and watch the division league go up to 3 games.
And they just lost the Browns just lost their, you know, franchise.
They lost Joe Thomas. Yeah. Yeah. And they're going to start Cody Kessler at quarterback, which is, he might be better than Brad Kaya, but he's not a lot better than Brad Kaya.
This is really a recipe for success for Cleveland this week here.
Oh my God. Yeah. So the nice thing is that the Lions have them on the schedule too.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And the Lions have the Ravens, and the Lions have the Bucks.
And the
Lions
Bengals
still have 5 division games, which is usually not a good thing, but this year it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me, because I do think that other than this Pittsburgh game, I do think the Lions are going to win all the other games that they are not playing the NFC North. My problem is that I do think that Aaron Rodgers is going to come back. He'll be back in week 15 or week 16. And in week 17, that game is going to be, I don't think it's going to be for the division title, because I do think the Vikings are going to have a big enough lead that they will have it sewn up. I think that game is going to be for a wild card. And the concept of needing to beat Aaron Rodgers in week 17 scares the living piss out of me.
Oh,
I don't agree about the Vikings. I just don't think they're a very good team when it all boils down overall, but maybe they'll prove me wrong.
I've got them winning 5 more games that starts this weekend. They do have a tougher schedule,
but
yeah. Well, you know, that's why they play the games.
Indeed.
Right,
indeed.
it wasn't this past weekend. It was the weekend before it where 10 underdogs won outright.
I mean, it's been a crazy year. This last week was the most normal week of the entire season.
It really was. It's bizarre, man. I remember seeing it because we do keep track of other things that professional writers have to keep track of. We have to keep track of like the professionals' picks and like the ESPN people. The best record on ESPN from that one week was somebody who went 6-8.
Wow!
I had 4 wins the one week, and that is by far the worst. I have won our mod league that for the RNFL mods. We have a pick'em league, and it's just for fun. We don't pay anything, but we've been doing it for probably 5 years, and I have won it 3 times, and I was in the lead again going into that week, and now I'm still tied for 2nd place. But one guy managed to get like 8 right that week, and I'm still going back and looking like, what the hell was he thinking? Like, why did he pick those teams to win? Like, that's absolutely crazy. He's still, even now, knowing that they won, what the hell was he thinking? That's what.
Sometimes you're better off just being a monkey with a dart, man. Yep.
I would not say that Case isn't. But you know, let me ask you this about that week, that last game of the season, the regular season here. I'm thinking that with 2 weeks to go, if the Packers aren't in it, they just leave Rodgers sitting. If they have hope, they bring him out. But at least me, if my team doesn't have a chance, or if it's a 9 million to 1 shot, I might just sit that franchise quarterback and let him just get healthy, rather than go out and risk it and get destroyed out there again. Any thoughts?
I think they'll be in it enough. I think 9-7 gets both NFC wild cards this year. Mm. I think they will be within enough, close enough to be in striking distance of that.
Yeah, we can only hope that Hundley melts down. please.
He's not good.
No. And Rodgers coming back, he's got to come to Detroit too. So it would absolutely be heroics on his point, on his part, to be able to turn that around. And the other good thing about the whole Minnesota narrative is we've got the first game out of that one. So the best they can do is get a tie if we wind up with the same.
And we get that, we get them on Thanksgiving, and Caldwell's Lions have been really good on Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yes, they
have. I'm happy about that.
All right, so now that we've won the NFC North and we're about to go win our first playoff game this year, before we do, we've got to get past some injuries. First, we had 4 players that missed practice the first part of this week on Monday. Greg Robinson, star left tackle, Golden Tate, Eric Ebron, and everybody's household name, Emmett Cleary, all missed practice Monday. What's the prognosis here, Riz?
Well, Ebron missed because now he's not hurt. Well, he might be hurt, but his butt hurt doesn't have anything to do with why he missed practice. He missed practice because he became a father, which is great.
And of course, we took all the Lions fans took the opportunity to, you know, tell him, don't drop the baby.
Yes. Yes. It had to be like the first 500 responses to his tweet. And the kids, it's a beautiful kid. If you didn't see the picture of it, go look at it. It's a really cute kid. It looks just like him, actually, like with more feminine features, which is what is common with most babies. But yeah, so he'll be back. He'll be fine. Tate is out at least this week, probably the week after too. The AC joint is a tough injury. It's one of those things that it's somewhat of a pain tolerance injury. But the other thing is that if you get back earlier, it's an injury which leaves you vulnerable to more serious injury if you don't let it heal before you get back out there.
Right.
And I think they will err on the side of caution with that, because when you do that, then you wind up with Sam Bradford and his knee, where they do the same basic thing. So I'm not optimistic that he will be back either of the next 2 weeks. He could play the following week, but so then you got Emmett Cleary, Emmett Otter's jug Christmas band, whatever the hell he is. I don't know who he is. I know he plays tackle, but I don't know who he is. So
he came from Dallas at some point, but
okay. This is the guy who I was looking up his transaction history, and there's like 37 of them over the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. He's been on practice squad, off practice squad, waived, injured, injury settlement, practice squad, off practice squad. Yeah, that's does it really matter at that point if he's healthy or not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so at least we have some positive. Kenny Galladay's back. That's a very good thing. He can only help the offense.
Yeah, him and Colbert Quinn both, right?
Yeah, it looks like Quinn will be back and playing, which is great. You know, Glover Quinn is the luckiest guy. He gets the most well-timed concussions. If you're going to get a concussion, it's happened to him twice.
I've never heard of a lucky concussion before, but if anybody can,
I'm sure he's probably not feeling too good about it either. It's all, obviously all relative.
I mean, go ahead.
I'm just happy that we're getting. I love Glover. You guys know I love.
Glover. Yeah, me too.
I'm happy he's back. I'm ecstatic that Sam Martin is back. I can't wait to take my pants off Sunday night when he's kicking. It's gonna be so much fun.
As far as the impact of the injury situation, okay. So first of all, we are in horrible shape at left tackle right now. That's like bad as Greg Robinson is, and he's one of the worst starting tackles in the league right now. I don't even know the guy. There's two tackles left on the roster, and they're not names that I know at all. I'm not even going to try to conjure them out of my head right now.
But. You got to go with Brian Mihalik, the guy who got chest pressed and thrown into Matthew Stafford.
Yes, that's thrilling. I have to go with him.
I know that came at the expense of the Lions, but if you don't love that as a football play, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. That's one of the greatest NFL plays you're ever going to see. It was awesome. And the fact that it happened to our team sucked, but that was incredible.
Some of the biggest
games. It's almost too bad
and biggest plays are against the Detroit Lions. But, he was on the field for 6 snaps, and 3 of them resulted in pressures or hits. That's not the guy I want on the right side of that line. Certainly not on the left side of that line.
I'm almost surprised they didn't find room to bring Norton up from the practice squad. But
I hadn't even thought of that, but you're absolutely right. That bugs me a little bit as Storm Norton's biggest fan. Yeah. I should have thought of that. Thanks, Kate.
On the positive side, as
his
you mentioned,
fan
you know, obviously
think about him.
Obviously, it's coming at the negative of Tate being hurt. Why it's such a good thing, but Galladay definitely is, and keep expectations tempered. Obviously, chances of him, having another game like he had in week one are pretty slim. But just to add another like different aspect to that offense is going to be big in terms of. We've talked about how vanilla the offense is. Just adding another option at the very least gives them a different play they can call. So like it's not like it's going to be, I'd rather have Tate out there than Galladay, but it's not as big a disaster as it would have been if neither of them were out there.
It's interesting case because I feel like Jones and Tate, while different players, they bring similar plays out of the playbook. Galladay changes things up significantly with Ebron gone or with Jones gone, and you put TJ Jones out there. You know what I mean? I just think Galladay changes the offense as a whole for a better. And while Ebron's obviously the better receiver, having Galladay on the field may actually make it a better offense. And now again, I'll temper that with I was a guy who had high hopes for Robinson this year. So we'll just kind of put that out there in the ether at the same time. But it'll be interesting to see how things work, because it was a different offense with Kenny Galladay on the field.
Well, it seemed like and I was right there with you in terms of just hoping for Robinson not to be one of the worst tackles in the league, and for a minute there it looked like maybe that was going to be the case.
I was so
and ultimately he ultimately
I was so going to stuff that up here, and that's why I preempted it by owning the failure on my part. Oh, man. So, yep, Galladay's back practicing this week. Glover, the quarterback, the defense, the guy we all love. And not only as a player, but he's a great guy around town. He's probably one of the best things other than Matthew Stafford. That happened in the Mayhew era, at least as far as one of my favorite ads to the team. Just love me some Glover.
Oh, totally agree. Couldn't agree more.
And this is a game Big Ben has shown repeatedly that if he gets pressured, he can throw some interceptions. So this is a game where we could see Quinn.
Yeah.
Get some, you know, some major plays in. So I'm not saying it will happen, but I'm not saying we will get pressure on him. But if we, but if they are, if they're able to do, you know, what they have done a couple times this year and get into the backfield, you know, with some consistency, don't be surprised if Quinn comes down with a pick or two.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's take a look ahead to the Steelers game. I mean, I feel like this is a game that, while we're not favorites, this is a game we certainly could win at home against the Steelers. Again, here I'm you know, talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I'll temper that expectation with the fact that Lions haven't won a Sunday night football game since 1999. That was posted by Rubber Toe. Yeah, that's 18 years. That's a long time not winning on Sunday night.
There's some context there. We've only played in seven games in that time. Played in seven Sunday night games.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of context that's not missing. Now, we've lost all seven of those games.
Yeah, we've only lost seven out of seven in the Sunday night games.
But
over 17,
but I mean, when you take into account that the Lions are a bad team in general, like, that's not really that shocking. So
yeah, for sure.
Have been a bad team. So
How many games did we win in that decade?
Yeah.
They have lost five Sunday night games since Stafford became part of the team, which isn't great.
You know, Caldwell and Quinn are two guys that have been flipping the narrative. All these things, the win at Lambeau, right? All those things. Mm-hmm. These guys are the ones.
Cardinals.
Yep. They're the ones that are flipping the narrative on this stuff. This is just another one that's ready to get flipped. And I mean it when I say this is certainly a winnable game. The Steelers are a little bit schizophrenic. There was a point where Roethlisberger was saying, maybe I shouldn't have come back this year, right? I mean, he was like questioning his ability as a quarterback and maybe that he was hurting the team being there. That hasn't gone away. That's still a possibility. They're playing in our dome, right? And he's, like you said earlier, Case, he's vulnerable under a little pressure to throw some interceptions. You get the pressure of the crowd working. I just see this as a winnable game. It's not going to be an easy win. It's going to be hard fought, and definitely we're not going to be the favorites. But a Lions team that can pull a win out of this week really flips the narrative on the season pretty quick, doesn't it?
The Steelers, of all the like good dynasty-esque, not to call them a dynasty right now per se, but of all the teams like the Packers, like the Patriots, like the, you know, the other teams that are, we expect to be consistently good, of all those teams, I think the Steelers are the one that seems to be most prone to the random ass dropped game. And so that you just have to hope with them that they have that off week, and it happens to them, especially on the road, more than any of the other like long-term good teams in the league, I think. So you just have to hope.
Do you want to do the Riz's rain cloud over this, or are you bringing some optimism, Riz?
I actually think that they have a shot at this. For, like you guys said, the Steelers, they're a tough team to trust. And when they're not good, they're really not good. They almost lost to Cleveland. That's how bad they are.
Yeah, they did. And they lost to the Bears, and they lost to the Jags, and not to say both of those teams are probably better than we thought they would be, but they lost to the Jaguars 30-9.
They did.
So, like,
and okay, so what's the common denominator between those teams? Jacksonville has had 10 sacks twice in a game this year. Mm-hmm. They've done it twice.
Wow.
Chicago, very active pass rush. They bring people from a lot of different angles. The Browns, the one thing they do well, they have a really good defensive front seven. That's the only thing they've got, but they can get pressure reliably from different places. If the Lions can get any pressure at all, this is the week to do it, because it will impact them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know that, like you guys said, you know, this is where Glover Quinn can get an interception. He can get a freebie. This is where good things can happen when you put pressure on Big Ben. One of the reasons they want to trade Martavis Bryant is because he runs routes like a bitch and doesn't care to fight when try to get open. Nevin Lawson is the perfect guy to cover him. Yeah. There's so many things that you know, you can point to and give the Lions a very good chance in this game. So I absolutely think they can win. I don't know if they will, but they can absolutely win this game.
Well,
it is not a hopeless game, at all.
When you talk about pressure, I mean, you've got that extra week of rest for Ziggy. For his leg, right? This is
and for Gerard Davis as well.
Right, right, exactly. This is a good opportunity for these guys to come back at the right time, come back healthy and strong and without some of the dings and bruises that you carry from week to week. I mean, the things are aligned for this team, and this would be a real statement win for the Lions to come out at home after a disappointing end to the first half of the season, I think is no stretch. To come back and seize the momentum at home against the Steelers. This is definitely a game where they could and should do that. Now, will they is another story. Pittsburgh, when Pittsburgh's on, they're a great team. So we'll have to see how that goes. You know, Antonio Brown against Darius Slay, we've seen that a couple times. Antonio Brown's generally come out on top. It'll be interesting to see how he and Slay play against each other this week.
He'll definitely get his.
There's a lot of fun matchups in this one. What's going to happen with Le'Veon Bell? You know, one of the things that the Steelers don't do well, they don't cover backs and tight ends in the middle of the field very well. So, this is a week where Eric Ebron could actually have a really big game.
Or Darren Fells. Let's not forget he's on the team.
And don't forget awesome. Michael Roberts will catch his one target, and he'll get 9 yards on it, and I'll be ecstatic.
Yep, that's the growth we're looking for. Playing just like our first round pick. All right. And with that, look at the Steelers. It's time to look inside a little bit. Not inside the team, but in and, well,
around the division.
There it is. Case, man. This is it. This is really becoming part of you, isn't it? Love that drop. All right, so like it says, we're going around the division. Case, where are we going to start this week?
Well, it is still on the bottom with the Bears. They are winning occasionally somehow. As we mentioned, Mitch Trubisky threw 7 passes and had 4 completions, and that somehow was enough to win, although they didn't score a single offensive point in the game. that's unsustainable. And you know, we've used that word over and over again for the Lions, but that's an unsustainable way to win. So they've kind of lucked, in my opinion. You don't get 2 defensive touchdowns in the same game, like ever. Yeah. So in my opinion, they've kind of lucked into their 3-4 record, which doesn't sound like that great of a record or anything. But I saw them as high as 15th in power rankings, and I laughed a little because I'm wondering if people who would rank them that high have actually watched them. I don't think they're an above average team. They're definitely still below average team. And their defense isn't bad. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying it isn't. But there's nothing really to latch on to, and it's the kind of team that I think teams will abuse down the stretch, because they don't have an offense to lean on when teams get desperate and start doing things that, you know, like the Lions do in the fourth quarter. That's how a lot of teams will get to be at this stage in the game in the season. And I think that will expose, you know, their lack of depth on defense as they're forced to, you know, try to rotate more as teams push them back and forth down the field a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I think their defense will probably falter a little bit, and they just don't have the offense to counter it. Sure. Is my opinion. I don't know that there's really a lot of news. Other than, you know, as I said, Eddie Jackson was the guy who the safety, I think he's a rookie, scored 2 defensive touchdowns. He's a guy to keep an eye on, but I mean, that's pretty fluky to manage that twice in one game. There really isn't much for me to latch my teeth into other than to say that they're going to start losing games more often than they win. They have a ceiling of about 7-9, I think. They're more likely a 5 or 6 win team. And being halfway through the season at 3 wins, I think that's about where we'll see them. So, Right. That doesn't mean that I think either of our games against them is an automatic win, because I actually do think they match up relatively well against the Lions.
Yeah, they've done,
in the same.
Yeah, they've done well throughout the division on building a team that matches up well.
Right.
They may not be a really great team, but boy, they can give anybody in the NFC North some trouble.
Well, and they match up against us in the same way that the Panthers did, at least on at least in terms of they have a very, you know, strong defense with a good pass rush, which is our Achilles heel right now, is dealing with strong pass rush. And they also have a defense or an offense that is, you know, when it is functioning, it's functioning as a kind of a novelty offense. And that's not something that we're very good at stopping, in large part because our linebacker, you know, core is not the most intuitive in the league, and they're easily fooled. And I think that's what the Bears will probably try to do against them, whether or not they probably aren't as good at it as the Panthers are. They're probably going to move the ball against us a little bit better than they move the ball against better linebacking cores.
Sure.
Or more experienced or more instinctive linebacking cores anyway.
All right. Let's climb the next rung of the division ladder. And
this is the first time I can remember this happening. It's probably happened before, but the next step up on the rung is the Packers. their loss this last week where Hundley looked awful and terrible, took them out of first place for the first time. I mean, the first time since late last season, that's for sure. I don't remember the last time for sure. I'm sure it was early last season.
I think it was where the first Packers week of the season, wasn't it? The first two
Well,
weeks,
yeah, that might be.
But they were above everybody else, so it doesn't matter.
I don't remember. But anyway, point is, in terms of the other three teams in the division, excuse me, that's how I should say it. In terms of the other three teams in the division, I don't know that I've seen them knocked out of being the other top team. Anyway, that's all beside the point. Brian Bulaga has cleared the concussion protocol and will almost certainly be back shortly. That's, you know, good news for their offensive line, which is really what you're going to see out of the Packers going forward, is that they're looking at their running back, Aaron Jones, who was one of their rookie running backs. You'll remember they triple dipped in the draft on running backs, and just hoping that one would stick, and it looks like one stuck.
Yeah,
So what they're going to be doing from here on out is completely shifting their offense away from their wide receivers into their run game. We've seen Devontae Adams take over the number one wide receiver role from Jordy Nelson, at least in terms of who opposing cornerbacks are lining up against. Which is a sign that Jordy is maybe finally like on his last legs. You're more likely to see him not as the X receiver anymore, and more of a Y or even a Z. We'll see. You know, he does have some experience running out of the slot, so I won't be surprised if that's where they move him into the more of a slot and possession type guy, which will be interesting to see the transition there.
Murdered across the middle to end his career.
That very could likely happen. Although, I mean, he's a tough guy, so you know, I won't be surprised if he survives there for a while. And otherwise, they have some aspects of the team that I think could, you know, float them a little bit. But truth of the matter is, without Rodgers, we've always said this, and I've actually said a couple times this season that I didn't know if it was as true as it used to be, and I'll stand by that. But the truth of the matter is that they just aren't a good team without Rodgers.
You know,
they have some things going for them.
Here we are on episode 125, and the first time we had Jim Brandstetter on was back at episode 7, and he said it then, and it still holds true now. As long as you have to go through number 12 in Green Bay, you're going to have a real hard time in the NFC North.
Yep.
And
yep.
Without him, that's a whole different team. Exactly what you said, and it's been true for years now.
No, I think more long-term, the question that we have to ask is, does this affect the longevity of Aaron Rodgers' career? because, you know, you get injured early on in your career, like Matthew Stafford did, and it's easy to come back and it's easy to put that behind you and it's easy to, you know, go forward. When you're as old as Rodgers is, he's 33 and you know, I'm 32 and I'm certainly not an athlete, but like just judging from, you know, the history of the NFL, those types of things, every single injury of major significance seems to add a little bit more weight onto a player and takes away some of what they can do in whatever area it is that injury happened to be in. This could potentially affect arm strength. It could, the missed time that he's not up, you know, keeping up with his body,
it could
affect him in minute ways. Right, exactly. So it would not, I'm not suggesting that this is the end for him. And we live in an era of football where guys are coming back from things, you know, oftentimes unexpectedly for long periods of time. But, it could affect him. And I think it's something that, you know, we should pay attention to going forward. It is within the realm of possibility that we've seen the last of elite Rodgers. Within the realm of possibility. I'm not saying it's likely, but it is there.
But we can hope for it. It's not ghoulish to hope for. We don't hope, or we say this all the time, but people, you know, the whole corrective Carl comes out every time somebody gets injured and people are like, oh yeah, Rodgers is down, this is pretty cool, and they're like, oh, that's terrible, you're a terrible human being. No, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, yeah, there are some people that are terrible human beings, no question about it, but it helps our team, and that is something we can be happy about. We can be happy that our team gets a benefit and still feel bad for the person who got hurt to get our team that benefit. I have no ill will towards Aaron Rodgers. I don't even want to say I'd rather have him on my team because I love Matthew Stafford so much, right? Just who he is and how he plays and stuff. But if it wasn't for Stafford, I'd want Aaron Rodgers on my team, right? He's just really, really good, and we have to face him every freaking year. It's like the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins have to face Tom Brady and Bill Belichick every year. They freaking hate him, right? And when Brady went down or was suspended, they're like, yay! It wasn't because they're happy. Well, I mean, again, the ghouls were, but most people weren't. They were just happy that it helped their team. So when we talk about this, understand that it's in the context of the team we love. We don't have any Aaron Rodgers voodoo dolls here and want him to, you know, secretly die in a grease fire or anything like that. But we certainly are happier when he's off the field rather than when he's on the field.
Yes. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with all of that. So we're looking at essentially the Packers season is probably over. It'll be so Packers-esque for them to show me wrong about saying that out loud. But I mean, you just have to, there's no way to look at what they've got right now and say, okay, yeah, that's a team that could win something.
All right, let's pull out the $100
so, right. So we move up to the top team in the division right now. It is the 5-2, probably soon to be 6-2 Minnesota Vikings. This team is a bit of an enigma to me because they lost Dalvin Cook and they've had this crazy quarterback situation all year where Sam Bradford goes absolutely crazy against their week one opponents and then gets hurt, tries to come back, can't come back. Case Keenum has a couple of big games in him. Teddy Bridgewater is in the wing. Sam Bradford may still play. It's all kinds of fucky. And
one thing I think we both agree, you can never count on someone named Case. So if Keenum is out there,
that is very true.
Then I feel good about it. But that guy, he's been playing fucking crazy good too. I mean, well, like Case Keenum never should ever have played in the NFL. He's been playing for this stupid team. And Bradford, I actually felt bad for him. As much as I hate the Vikings, I felt bad for him trying to move out there when he was playing. It was like, oh my God, who cleared this guy to play in the field? And the lawyer in me is screaming, lawsuit on its way. Nobody should have put this bitch on the field because he can barely fucking walk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was a terrible mistake. But here's the thing with, I mean, if you're looking at Case's stats, he's 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 89 passer rating. So it's not like he's amazing. And I honestly think that you know, we saw it, he get propped up by one game too, in terms of it. Well, right. And I should say he had two good games, one against Chicago, one against Tampa Bay. But the other four games he's had, he's been at 78.7 or less, two games in the 60s in passer rating. What you're looking at is a guy who occasionally, I mean, what he does that that Sam Bradford didn't do was that he occasionally pushes the ball down the field. And in games where they face weak secondaries, they're able to take advantage of that by creating, you know, by having good route runners who are able to take advantage of bad zone coverage. That's just not going to happen very often, especially through the rest of the year for them. And I think that the longer Case plays as their starting quarterback, the more problems they're going to have, getting away with anything, you know, of significance. They've won their last three games despite him not playing well in their last two. I think that is putting an undue burden on their defense. And while they have a very good defense, I just don't think that's unsustainable. Our word of the week. Where's our little sound clip? But nope,
not getting it.
But I don't think that's a sustainable way to win. I think that's why we'll see them start to drop games, especially against quite a few good teams or at least mediocre teams that they'll be facing on the road coming up in the next month here. And while maybe, I mean, you look at them as in the driver's seat of the division right now, theoretically, there's so much that could go wrong with them at any moment that it's very hard to trust them as a team going forward. And so it won't be a surprise in the least to me if the wheels fall off any moment. And I know maybe that comes off as a bias of mine against the Vikings, but I've watched more Vikings games than I've watched any other team. And that's always the case. And it's just, there's so many times when things happen for them that I don't think are going to keep happening for them.
You want to blow that?
That's my thought on that.
You want to blow that big horn at US Bank?
That is really the most obnoxious thing in the world. I listen to them on the radio a lot because when I'm at work and they're playing, every time, every single freaking time, there's a significant play, they blow the damn horn. It is so incredibly annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss the old Lions growl that every time first down, the old Ford Field before that Silverstone growl. I loved it. But all right.
It's the horn itself that's annoying, not the usage of some kind of thing.
And on that note, we're going to call it a week. Remember, the show needs your involvement. Use the comments in the subreddit. Give us your feedback. Your feedback is what makes us the number one Detroit Lions podcast, and we appreciate every one of you that download the show. Don't forget, tell your friends about it. Share it with your family. Let them know. We love it that you share with other people, and it shows that you really, really care. Don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that Patreon link. Thank you, everyone who's taken part in that. As I said earlier, this is the crazy week of travel here kind of cut us off, but we got some good stuff coming for you guys. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and follow us on the Twitter maker. That's @DETLionsPodcast, @DETLionsPodcast. It is the very best place to see Case
and my glowing jack-o'-lanterns.
Okay. Help us out by using that shop link on the website for Amazon, for Fanatics, for all your official team gear, any sport, it's all there. And for any of the seats that you'd like to buy to go see any of your teams or concerts, music, all that kind of stuff. Shop link at DetroitLionsPodcast.com helps us out, and we appreciate all of you that are using those links. Don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. That's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast. Or call us on the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. That's 929-335-4667. Give us a chance. Give us a chance to hear yourself on the show. Speaking of the show, if you haven't gone to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and subscribed, shame. Shame on you. Go there so we can come in your little box automatically. Thank you for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3. Lions!